Hi, everybody. Hope you're having a great day so far. Before you start today's episode, I just want to give you a small reminder to hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you're listening to today's podcast. And also, if you have the time, if you could feel free to leave us a review, that would help us out tremendously. There are some weird podcast algorithms that are out there. Too scientific for me to comprehend or explain, but it would help us out tremendously if you did that. Thanks for listening to the Northern Nerd Podcast. So now that my daughter is officially a year old, I think it's time we take a look back at year one of fatherhood with me, the Northern Nerd. I'm not here to provide you a bunch of wise and sage advice. I'm just here to share my story, and hopefully you're able to take something from that, maybe pick up a tip or a trick along the way, or maybe I'll provide you with some cautionary tales of things I've gone through as a dad. Hopefully you can tuck away, whether you are expecting or hope to be a dad one day in the future, whether you have a child of your own. I think there's something that you'll be able to take away from this episode. So we're just going to start off from when we found out that my wife was pregnant and all the way down to my daughter turning a year old. And I'll just share my story on what it's like to be a dad so far. So hold on tight and here we go. So do you want to know how my wife told me that we were having a baby? Well, it was around Christmas time and she broke out the stockings and said, "You know, honey, I think we should do stocking stuffers this year." And she already had something in my stocking for me. And I was like, "Okay, well, I'll put something in there eventually for you." She's like, "Okay, well, you know, I want you to start off and I want you to see what's in your stocking." And, you know, at this point, like, we weren't really like necessarily trying to get pregnant or things like that, but we also were accepting the fact that if she got pregnant, that we were going to be okay. We had a house and we had full-time jobs and things like that, and we were just, you know, ready if that happened. And so, you know, I wasn't really expecting anything. Reached in, thought it was going to be like a gift card or something like that, and it turned out to be a positive pregnancy test. And my reaction was, she has this on video, by the way. And my reaction was, "Well, Merry Christmas to all." So, I mean, I was just so excited and, just, you know, that feeling of, wow, this, you know, I'm going to be a dad. And that's not something that, it didn't really hit me that I was going to be a dad. Like, it was kind of like this far off thing until we were in the, delivery room and everything like that. But I'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, it was such an exciting time, especially right around the holidays, that we were just excited to tell other people as well. You know, we wanted to at least wait until things were a little bit further along, because this was pretty early on in Claire's pregnancy. So we didn't want to like jump the gun at all and share the news with people and if we had something unfortunate happen. So we really wanted to make sure that things were progressing in the right way before we started to share the news with family and friends. And so after that, we started going to appointments and everything that you do when it comes to, you know, having a baby and getting ready. And, you know, I felt like, you know, it's important for the dad to still tag along to those if they're able to. I think that would be a great thing to be a part of if you're like, "Oh, my wife's the ones that's pregnant. I don't need to attend that." No, you still should be there to support your wife through that. Because I mean, that's what, a good husband does, is they're there and they're making sure that, you know, their wife feels supported and you're able to either talk about things, bounce ideas off of each other. And you know how hospitals are. Sometimes you have to wait a long time, and your significant other shouldn't have to sit there alone and think about all those thoughts on that by themselves. So it's important if you're able to go there and be at those appointments, even though the doctor is talking to your wife most of the time, it's still important for you to be informed. That's just my two cents on that. But after the appointments, you know, as things progress, as you go from the first trimester, Claire happened to be really sleepy. I said, well, she kind of said this. I'm not calling my wife a bear in hibernation. She said those words first, but she slept a lot during the first trimester. And so luckily it was like January and February, so there wasn't a whole lot to do outside at that point anyways. So she got a lot of naps in. I watched a lot of football, and we made it through the first trimester. And then as we progress and things like that, you know, second trimester, they say, is always like the one where you start to feel more like yourself. First trimester, you can be really tired and things like that, which was Claire's case. But the second trimester, Claire really felt more like herself. And then the third trimester, you're getting closer and closer to baby coming. And as you know, the pregnancy cravings and things like that, Claire didn't have too many crazy ones or unique ones that I can think of. We just had a lot of ice cream. And so with that, I want to talk about a sympathy weight. As a dad, you're going to gain some sympathy weight. So just eat the ice cream. I know that sometimes you're like, gosh, I really probably shouldn't, but just eat the ice cream. You get a free pass, you know, to put on that dad weight. And I think a lot of people expect that to happen. Like, as far as dads go, like, you're along for the ride. You should not make your wife feel like she's the only one that's participating in the ice cream festivities. If that's the thing of choice that your wife chooses, for us, it was always ice cream. But maybe it happens to be pizza or whatever those snack foods are that your wife really enjoys. So just be prepared to gain that dad sympathy weight and embrace that to the best of your abilities. Now going to when everything becomes real, when the water breaks and you're not really sure, like, oh dang, this is happening. The best thing that you can do is just to try to, you know, remain calm. Now that's easier said than done. But the best thing that you can do is just be there to be as supportive as possible for your wife, and just let her know that, you know, everything is going to be okay as you're making your way to the hospital. Everybody's situation is different when their water breaks. Maybe it's our case. It was like it broke during a thunderstorm, and we called our doctor and she said, well, are you feeling any like pain, or do you feel like you're having any contractions? And Claire wasn't. So they just said, all right, go to bed and come check with us in the morning kind of deal. So it wasn't like how they make it out in the movies or TV shows. And then eventually we went to the hospital, got us checked in and everything like that. And things weren't really progressing too much since Claire's water broke. We just kind of were hanging out in the hospital that first night, and just like wandering the halls of the hospital, just kind of waiting for things to kick off. We were making, I don't know, silly TikToks and things like that, and just, you know, living it up in the hospital. We went down to the cafeteria where they had like this boombox going and lights and everything like that. And we weren't causing mischief. I'm not saying that we got into any legitimate trouble, but it was just like, I don't know, just really us enjoying the last, I'd say, evening with us just being the two of us before we became a family of three. And so it's fun to kind of think about that time and just what we were able to, how we were able to pass the time. But then once the doctors noticed that things weren't really happening as far as Claire's delivery process goes, like the baby wasn't on its way out after the water broke and everything, then we needed to start to accelerate the process because there was risk of infection and things like that. And so what we did after that was Claire really started to, after they like started to induce her, and we really wanted to do it as natural as possible, but there comes a point in time where it's like, all right, well, here was plan A, now it's time to go with plan B, even scoot down to plan C or plan D. And so went through with the induction process and things like that, and things still weren't really happening. And this is where things started to get a little bit scary, because it was like 36 hours after Claire's water broke, and she was starting to get a fever, and baby's heart rate was all over the place. And so then finally made the decision that that we were going to have an emergency C-section. Claire was going to get emergency C-section. And I remember going for a walk like right before right before they made the decision to have the emergency C-section when everything was like fluctuating. And it was just one of those things, like, I don't know, there's a little path by the hospital in Hayward, and I just went for a walk and just prayed the whole time, just like, man, I can't lose my wife, I can't lose my baby, I just need everything to go okay. And I just put my trust in God and just was, you know, just took it out of my hands. There wasn't really much I could do besides being there to support my wife and to, you know, just be in that moment with her and just know that we put the trust in the doctors to make sure the C-section went all right and that they were going along with their advice and everything to make things happen. And eventually, you know, C-section, they take Claire back and they get me and all the scrubs and everything like that. And they almost forgot about me. I was waiting back there and they almost forgot about me. I had to like run down the hallway to make sure I was there. That somebody came and grabbed me. And then I was basically sprinting down the hallway to make sure I was there once the baby came. Because again, like I mentioned, we didn't know what we were having. And so it was a lot of, I get to announce whether it's a boy or a girl. And I'm not a big fan of blood. Like, it's not my jam at all. Like, I hate scary movies. I don't like them one bit if there's any bit of gore. Even if I'm watching, you know, the Hayward classic Bloodhook, I still have to look away when even though it's like cheesy gore and it's super excessive, like, I'm not about that life. So I was kind of glad when they had like a curtain pulled up because I didn't have to really see too much. Like, they lifted Amelia up and I got to say, it's a girl. And they immediately pulled her back down to suction whatever they needed to off of her. I don't really know the scientific or medical terms there for everything, but then they pulled the curtain back up. And then I got to hold my baby and cut the umbilical cord. And it was such a rush. It was such a high. Like, there's nothing else I can compare it to. I never won like a state championship in sports or anything like that. And even if I did, I still, like, this would be higher than that or higher than the feeling like you're, all right, wedding day is like right up there. But then like the birth of your child is like, there's nothing you can compare it to. Dads that already have kids, you know what I'm talking about. Fathers that are expecting here soon. It's going to be the greatest rush of adrenaline in your life. And it's going to make you feel super, just super proud. And just such a deep love for your wife for going through that. Gosh, like the stuff that I saw Claire go through is just like, makes me have such a deep appreciation for her, because to put your body through that and to just show, like, being a champion in that, to birth this baby. And then, man, I don't know if I could do it. Like, looking at her, I'm like, I don't know how you do it. And so I think that was one of the greatest things I could have witnessed as well. Just seeing the strength that Claire had through all that. It just made me super, super proud to be her husband. But going off of, you know, after the baby's been delivered and things like that, you know, those first few diapers that you're going to change, they call it like meconium. I think that's the proper word, but it's black poop. Basically is the simplest terms I can put it. It's black poop. And so Claire was in recovery after quite some time. Like, after, I mean, she had a C-section, so she was feeling not the most mobile, but she also was on a lot of pain medication as well. So she couldn't really move too much. And so I was the one to change the first few diapers with the nurses and things like that. And by the end of it, I got pretty good at it. But at first I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to do this, I don't know, until we get her potty trained. Like, this is really sinking in, just how crappy, yes, got that pun in, how crappy of a situation this is. But eventually figured it out. I also think like the tough part too was swaddling, learning how to swaddle. That was a difficult thing for me to first wrap my head around, was perfecting that swaddle. Because I saw the nurses, and the nurses are working with babies all the time, so they're like pros. And so see me try to do it. Like, I can't even wrap my own burritos at home that well. So trying to wrap a baby now, baby wasn't like fighting me as much as she does now when it comes to changing her diaper, but just trying to get the swaddle on was a difficult challenge. But also, I will say this. If you're buying pajamas, make sure it's not the button ones. Just get zipper ones, because the buttons are a nightmare. If you're like trying to change in the middle of the night and you got to try to undo all these buttons and then put them back together after you change when it's like, I don't know, 3 a.m., it is just an absolute nightmare. So if you're buying pajamas for somebody, baby clothes, I mean, maybe you're buying pajamas for an adult friend that you have, but your Uncle Mike needs some new Packers pajamas or something like that. But if you're buying pajamas for an infant, unless you hate that person, please get them the zipper pajamas. They'll thank you so much for it, for not giving them button ones. So that kind of goes into like the first few nights. The first few nights are so, you're so tired. You didn't think your body would be able to run on such little sleep, because one, you're just getting up all the time and checking to see if your child is still breathing, because you're like, I don't know, a lot of stuff. There's a lot of health stuff that can happen within those first few weeks. And so you're really just cognizant of the fact, like, all right, checking in, making sure they're still good. And then you're also feeding. And so the first few nights that we had, you know, Claire tried breastfeeding and things like that. And unfortunately, she just wasn't able to make that work. So then we switched over to formula, and formula gave me a chance to like help out. And so beforehand, I was like just awake with Claire as she was trying to breastfeed Mia. And then it was just like, okay, I can help out. Like, you can stay in bed and I can go make a bottle of formula and feed it to Mia. So that actually made me feel more useful rather than just being kind of like a bump on a log there. Going back to like how I felt during the appointments, it was just like, hey, I'm here. So I think being able to assist in any way that you can is just gonna help like not form any resentment in your relationship. Like, if your wife's always the one that's getting up, or if she's always the one to clean the bottles or take out the diapers, like, you name it, like, just be a good teammate. Like, what would you want done for you? Go make sure that you can do that for your wife. And that's just going to make things that much better when it comes to raising your child, because there's not going to be like that one person that feels like they're carrying the whole load. If you can share the load, that's just going to make your situation a lot better and your marriage a lot better. The one thing that I couldn't stand was when we finally took, I'm not usually a big complainer, so just let me have this one moment, please. The one thing that I couldn't stand when we first started bringing Mia out, you know, we waited like 6 weeks to really bring her out into public that much, just because we wanted to not risk anything, getting any illnesses or any weird stuff like that. The wait and tell people. So like, if we're going somewhere, they're like, oh, just wait until she's two. Those terrible twos will get you. Or wait until she's five. Or wait until she's a teenager. Like, the wait and tell people. And I've made a previous video about this, but like, the wait and tell people are the worst. It's just let me enjoy this time. Like, I don't know. I'd say Mia was a very good like kid as she was going through her first year. Like, she wasn't super fussy unless she was either hungry or needed to be changed, but she wasn't like fussy just to fuss. And so I would kind of tell people that, like, hey, it's been pretty good. Once you finally get into a sleep routine and everything like that. And then somebody's always just got to like bring down your day and just be like, wait until they do this. And, you know, I'm not going to be a wait until person. I'm like, if somebody like years down the road, or even now, if somebody has a new baby, I'm not going to just say, well, wait until this comes, because you better really hold on for when that time hits. I'm not going to be that person. Don't be that person. Don't be wait and tell people, because, you know, those are the people that I hope get the button up pajamas. Wait and tell people. Another thing that is hard to come to terms with is just how much your child is going to get sick in the first year. First few years is what people tell me. It is nuts. Just like runny noses or ear infections. You know, when Mia first got her first ear infection, she just like would slap the side of her head. That was kind of like her tell. And it took us a little while. We're like, why the heck does she keep slapping the side of her head? Like, we thought something was wrong with her. Cause she had like her own personal metronome. She was just slapping the side of her head constantly. And, we finally pieced it together. Like, hey, something's probably wrong here with her ear. Let's go get her checked out, kind of deal. But everything, like when she first started daycare after, Thanksgiving, yeah, she would just pick up everything. So it's just, prepare for that. You're going to start, if you haven't used your sick days at work, if you're one of those people that's like, I never get sick. Well, once your child gets sick, you're going to start taking more of those sick days. And being a teacher, writing sub plans is not fun, but you know, it helps to have a great team of teachers as well to help you out through that. So I'm thankful that I do have a good team of second grade teachers to help me with those sub plans. But yeah, taking time off is never easy. But you know, those days when you're at home with your sick kid and you're just able to spend that time together and be there to just hold them and comfort them, like those during those first few months too, they're not even moving around that much. They're just eating and sleeping and pooping. So getting into that rhythm, like after those first few weeks where you're like, okay, I can sleep a little bit during the night. I know I'm going to have to wake up and feed them, but I can sleep a little bit and I can kind of anticipate when they're going to wake up. And you're starting to figure out the swaddling and you're starting to figure out how to change a diaper in under 10 minutes. Those first few ones are a little tough. I wouldn't say 10 minutes. That's a slight exaggeration, but stay with me here. You're just piecing things together, right? You're watching football on a Sunday and your baby's sleeping on your chest and they're not going anywhere. They're not moving. You're not moving. You're just taking it easy. You're finding your rhythm. And then they'll go through a sleep regression or something along those lines. But, you know, it's such a good feeling when you're able to find those little rhythms where you can. Also, the milestones that your child is going to make along the way are going to be so fun to watch. Like when Mia first started lifting her head or she started crawling around. And one of the things that I kind of jokingly did was I would, like, if I was washing dishes, and we kind of have an open concept at our house, and if I was washing dishes and this was at the point where she could lift her head a little bit and just kind of be looking around, I would kind of give her like a sup and tilt my head up. And she started to do the same thing back to me, like, what's up, Dad? What's up, Mia? And that was kind of our fun little thing. But once they start getting mobile, like crawling around, it is so fun to watch just her imagination and what she plays with or what she gets into. And now she kind of knows. I was telling Claire this just today, actually. Like, Mia right now is to the point where she's confident in her walking abilities and also confident in being able to get into stuff, even stuff she knows she's not supposed to get into, like the different cabinets. And we have child locks on them, but there's some that just, I don't know if it's our cabinets or if it's my installation, like just lack of know-how, but there's some that she's still able to get into. And I'll say, Mia, we're not going in there right now. And she'll look at me and like smile and still open the door. And I just liken her to Johnny Knoxville from Jackass. She goes, hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville and this is Jackass. Like, she's just going after it with whatever it is she's going to do. And there are times where she'll like climb up on, she'll try to, if I'm unloading the dishwasher, she'll try to climb onto the dishwasher. And I know that she doesn't have the coordination yet to stay on top of it, so I know that she'll fall off. So I get ready to catch her. But one of the things I had to get used to is just like, there are going to be things that happen that are out of my control. Like, even if I watch her, if I'm watching from like 5 feet away, there are going to be times where she's going to fall. And coming to terms with that has been a little tough for me. I don't know if it's just like my, I want to be like as protective as possible. I really don't want to be one of like those helicopter parents. I'm not ready to put her in a bubble yet or anything like that. But it's just something like I worry about head injuries quite a bit. And I think, I don't know, just from watching, I don't know, you watch football or things like that, that especially with the whole Tua Tagovailoa thing. Now I know that a toddler or a child falling over in the kitchen is not nearly the same thing as getting hit by a 300-pound defensive lineman. Don't get me wrong on that, but it's still like the head trauma is stuff I still worry about. And so I don't know. That's part of it, is like kids are going to get bumps, they're going to get cuts, they're going to get bruises here and there from just the as they're learning, as they're figuring things out, right? And that's just something that I've just had to come to terms with, is those things are going to come, those things are going to happen, and hopefully she learns from those different things as time goes on. All right, we're going to take a little break here, and then we'll get back to some of your questions that you had on either Instagram or my Facebook page, and then we'll finish up with the last bit of year one in the books. So I recently asked my followers on both Facebook and Instagram at The Northern Nerd, what are some questions that you have for me? And I'm going to do the best that I can to answer them, and they may be featured on the show. And here are some of the questions that I got. And the first one being, did you always want to teach second grade? And my answer is yes. It was something that I had experience in just from high school being a hero. So in high school, you can be what they call a hero, is you're helping out different teachers. So whether that's at an elementary level, or you can even help out some high school teachers, grade different tests and things, just to kind of get some experience in a classroom. Maybe education is something you're looking to go into, or maybe you're just trying to fill a block of class as you're graduating high school. And, you know, senior year can kind of be one of those things like, yes, you still want to challenge yourself, but you're also not having too busy of a schedule like you did previous years. And so I got to help out quite a bit with some of the elementary classes, and mostly second grade is what I helped out with. And there was a teacher named Gail Kluklinski, who I helped out with pretty often and got to know her pretty well. And as things went on, she would keep checking in with me throughout college, making sure I was still doing elementary education. And she said, I'm going to wait. She essentially said, I'm going to wait for you to finish college and then I'm going to retire, and hopefully you can step into my role. And just things happened to fall into place where I interviewed for second grade and a third grade job. They had both positions open, and they asked me if I wanted second grade, and I took it, and I've just been teaching second grade ever since, so entering my sixth year. So yeah, second grade was kind of always on my radar. I didn't feel like I wanted to go any lower than that, but I also don't think I could teach middle school. I think if I had to teach middle school, I probably could, but it wouldn't be something that I would choose to do. I think probably the highest I would go would be fifth grade. I feel like that's kind of where I would stop. Another question that I had pertaining to teaching was, what do your students say about having that teacher who's all over social media? And that's from Jason Alley. And the previous question was from Wanda Marie. So thank you guys for your questions. You know, sometimes parents will mention it at parent-teacher conferences, like they love hearing some quotes from the day. So that's something that I'll put out pretty often, are quotes from students. Now, I never put like their name associated with it. I just say like student one, student two. But I'd say for the most part, I don't think I've had any negative experiences or things from parents saying like, why are you sharing stories from a class? Or even with something like as my Packers spelling test, like I usually record those towards the end of the day and I never show my students' faces or things, and all of our academics are already done. So it's really just like the last 5-10 minutes of the day. So that's kind of been all positive so far. And that's something I really try to be mindful of, is the stuff that I'm putting out on social media. If you've been following my page for a while, you probably know that. Like I don't swear. I really try not to swear. Like I think maybe out of the thousands of videos that I posted, maybe I've had a video that I've had like a voiceover even like swear once or twice. Like I really don't try to do it that often. I want to be mindful of the things that I'm putting out there, because I know that there might be like some of my high school baseball players that follow me, or just different people out in the community that I want to make sure that I am putting stuff out there that I'm proud of, and not trying to be someone that's like chasing a trend, but I want to be true to who I am. And I want to be able to, like, if I put something out there, I want to be able to defend it and say, like, this is what I'm about. And I never want to put myself in a situation where I have to, I don't know, like, I never want to be the one that's like putting stuff out there where I have to second guess whether I should put it out there or not. If I'm second guessing it, then I probably don't need to put it out there. And that was something that I learned back in like middle school. I think I was watching a video of JJ Watt, and he was talking about, like, this was the early days of social media. And he was saying, like, if I have to second guess about posting it, then I'm not going to post it. Because if you have that split second thought where you're like, should I, shouldn't I? Then you probably just shouldn't, because there's probably some way it could be negatively perceived. So that's how I try to stay. That's how I try to stay making sure that every interaction that I have with parents is from a positive standpoint when I'm like putting stuff out there as a second grade teacher. So thank you, Jason, for your question there. That was kind of a long-winded answer. Oh boy, this is a controversial one by Tony Schmidt. Thank you for your question. Do you believe Louis Sprays legally caught the world record muskie, and should he officially be awarded the title of world record holder, in your opinion? Hot topic around the Hayward area for years. Lots of different opinions and theories. You know, it's from, yeah. I mean, I love going to check that out at the Moccasin Bar in Hayward. A classic dive bar that everyone should experience. If you're bringing your friends to Hayward, you got to check out the taxidermy that's in the Moccasin. And one of the things that they have there is the world record muskie. That's a tough thing to tackle there, Tony, because I know that's what, like, it makes Hayward famous, is the home of world record muskies and things. But if it wasn't caught with integrity, like if it was all like a fallacy, if it was all fabricated and it was not done legally, then what is the, it makes you question like your whole reality of what we've been like. Why do we have Muskie Fest? If this was all done falsely, that would be terrible. So my opinion is, I hope that he didn't do that. I haven't really dug too far into that, but I just want to lean on good people catching big fish. I'm not sure who he was as a person. I hope he was a good dude. But if it turns out like it was, if the fish ended up being like filled with lead to make it heavier, or I don't know, weird stuff like that. I'm not a big fisherman. I know that's probably a sin living in the North Woods of Wisconsin. I'm more of a deer hunter than I am a fisherman. But yeah, I would hope that it is truly a world record muskie, and I'll leave it at that. That's what I'm going to stand on. So thanks for your question there, Tony. All right. What kind of business or kind of businesses does Hayward truly need, not just one that caters to visitors? And that's a question from Andrea Anderson Swenson. So thank you for your question. As far as businesses go, I really think we could use another grocery store. I just think it would be nice to have some variety and to kind of have some competition when it comes to prices. Not going to get like too crazy into it because, I don't know. I don't think this is really the platform for it, but maybe it is. I don't know. You can let me know. But I sometimes feel like if there's not that competition driving it, driving the grocery prices, they're just going to either climb up, or yeah, there's nothing that's really going to bring them down. And sometimes we can be taken advantage of in a small town because we have to pay it because those are the only two options in town. We have Marketplace and we have Walmart. So I wish we had another option as far as grocery goes, but I also wish we had more options as far as like clothing go. Like if we had like a Target, I feel like that would be super fantastic. Like if I didn't have to drive all the way up to Duluth or down to Eau Claire to go to a Target, that'd be great. Cause I think they have a good variety of clothing. Nothing against Walmart, but I just don't buy Walmart clothes. It's just not my style. But if I am at a Target, I'm definitely going to be checking out what they have to offer. So I feel like we could really benefit from a Target. And now you might be saying, small town, we don't like big chain things coming in to small town, which I understand. I love my mom and pop restaurants and things like that. I would also have to say just some healthier food options would be cool. So maybe like place to get something during lunch that would be a healthier option rather than just like fast food. I would really like something that is going to nourish my body, but also be quick. So something I don't have to wait a crazy amount of time for. But I think Hayward would really benefit from that. And I'll answer one more question here and then we'll get back to the second half of Dad Life and send you on your way. All right. The next question that we have is, what do you feel is one of the most valuable experiences you had as a child that shaped the adult slash parent you are today? And that's from Joy May Rogers. Thank you for your question, Joy. I think one of those experiences would have to be just all the different sports I played, but also having the coaches that I had. Like being older now, I can look back and say like, wow, I'm just super thankful that I had the guidance that I did. Of course, you're going to have like coaches that you disagree with along the way, but I'd say the majority of coaches that I had like were so caring and just like wanted to see me not only progress as a player, but also as a man. I don't know if you know this or not, but there's not a lot of people that come from small towns that make it to the pros. Now, not to say that you shouldn't be a dreamer and you shouldn't work hard and go after those kinds of things, but there's you can just look at the number of people that have come from small towns that have made it to the MLB or small towns in the Northwoods. I'll say that. Like we don't have a lot of pro athletes from Hayward. Okay, it's no secret. But again, I think like they cared more about the person that I was going to be in the future, that it was bigger than sports. It was bigger than sports. And I'm just truly thankful for that because like it's not like I was running with the round crowd often or anything like that, or getting into a bunch of trouble. But I think like just having the conversations that I did with them, whether it was to a tournament or to a game or just even after something bad happened in the game or reflecting on a loss, like I'm super thankful for those conversations and those people that I had in my life, like my dad being one of them, and just other people along the way. So I think that's really helped shape me into who I am is having those people in my life. All right, now let's get back to the second half of Dad Life. Thank you for your questions. Take the pictures, take the videos. Don't worry about being cringy that you're taking videos and pictures all the time, because you're going to look back at this and wish you had taken more, even on top of all the ones that you've taken. When you become a parent, it's just like you want to bottle up as much of that time as you can. Like even right now, it is September 22nd, and like in the blink of an eye, if we've already gone through the whole month of September to me. And so time stops for no one. Time is just constantly going. And so if you're able to capture as many of those moments as you can, do it. Like, especially when it comes to, now I hated getting out my camera every time for this, and Claire will tell you this too. But like even those monthly photos that you take on a blanket where it has like, we have it circled where, oh, it's month one, month two, month three, you get the point. Those were, I don't know, I hated getting out the blanket and all this stuff, but I'm glad that we have those to look back on and say, wow, this is what our daughter looked like at 1 month, and now compare it to when she's 11 months old. It's just crazy what time does and how like the human body develops over that short amount of time, especially when you're a baby. And it's only going to go by faster from what they tell me. So trying to hang on to all those precious moments, but take as many pictures, take as many videos as you can, and just truly try to soak up as much of being a dad as you can. That's my biggest piece of advice that I can give you, is be as present as possible as well. And it's something in today's day and age where our phones try to suck as much time from us as we can. And I'm the biggest like person of this is one thing that I'm continually trying to work on is like, yes, I'm trying to continue to build my brand and grow my social media and things, but it's also being as present as possible as I can with my family. And so, you know, if it comes to putting my phone away in a different room and then trying to be present, that's what I have to do because we're not given this time back. So as I look ahead towards the future and as my daughter continues to grow, one of the things that I always want to have her remember is that I was there and I was present. And, you know, I was there on the good days. I was there on the bad days. I was in the stands or in wherever it is that she is, I'm there. So whether she ends up pursuing sports or not, or maybe she does music or theater or whatever the case may be, I want to be there to support her. And so as I, you know, set goals for myself as what I want to be as a dad, that's something that I want to be as present as possible. And I hope the same for you. And wherever you're at, whether you're expecting to be a dad, whether you're a dad now, just try to keep that in mind. Try to be as present as possible and soak it all up while you can. And with that final thought, we're going to wrap up this episode of looking back at a year in the life of being a dad. And, you know, this is probably like the longest I've ever talked by myself on a podcast episode. And thank you for, if you're still listening at this point, thank you for listening. It's something that I want to try to do more of and get better at. Probably this episode probably seemed like I was rambling on quite a bit, but I want to just share my thoughts, not only on dad life, but on being a teacher, being a writer, creative person, you name it. I want to like talk about that aspect of my life. And so I appreciate you listening and look forward to talking with you on the next episode. Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to us on Apple Music and Spotify Music so you know when our latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast is coming out. That about does it for us, so continue to be kind to one another, and we'll see you around town.